Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt and this is another podcast for Beyond the Mekong, which is broadcast by The Diplomat. And with me today is Leslie Lopez, a very well-known Malaysian journalist who has a terrific book out, The Siege Within, which goes into great detail and great length about a story that we've all covered over, 15 years. And that is 1MDB, One Malaysian Berhad. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Luke. Glad to be on it, and thanks for having me.
Oh, congratulations on the book. By all reports, it's a cracker.
Thank you.
Take us back to 2009. I remember working in Malaysia at the time extensively, and when 1MDB was set up, there were rumours circulating around it and potential corruption that might come out of it right from day one. And you've gone into great lengths with this read. Give us the background for the listener's sake.
Well, yeah, look, 1MDB, when it started, it raised eyebrows immediately. I mean, here was a state-owned company embarking on a very, very novel financial engineering experiment by raising money, not small amounts. It was 5 billion ringgit at that point, roughly equivalent to about 2.4 billion US dollars. Just over 1 billion US dollars. But what they were doing was, they were doing it by issuing bonds to the Malaysian market with some very attractive investment returns, much higher than what governments would actually offer when they enter the bond market. And this raised eyebrows immediately. Mm-hmm. And no one knew where the money was going. All that was said was, this was a strategic investment fund for the government to invest overseas. And this fund was created in April, just barely a month after Najib took power in 2009. Mm-hmm. And by September, late September, I was already following this. And this fund raised money, and quickly, very, very quickly, almost the entire chunk of that 5 billion ringgit that was raised left the country to an entity that was really unknown, called Petro Saudi, and that is how the reporting began. And now, many years later, more than, almost 20 over years later, I've pieced together a full account of what has happened in Ground Zero in Malaysia about the scandal, The Siege Within, the book. Just not 1MDB, but it also offers a narrative revealing the reader to kind of previously undisclosed slices and moments of contemporary Malaysia before dissecting the 1MDB scandal. But I think what's going to be interesting about this, it also provides the political dimension to this. And, 1MDB became something that was weaponized by people who decided to go after Najib.
Right.
There's nothing altruistic about some people portray this as good over evil and all. It is not. It's very Malaysian. It is very scandalous. And this book breaks away from this affair that is, I think, laden with shades of truth and cover-ups to protect people in high places who were really complicit in this thing. And the book talks about this former central bank governor and her role in this affair that's never been covered before. A lot of new stuff, and I think it's going to make waves again, on this affair that continues to reverberate, not just in Malaysia, but in the US, where the DOJ continues to try and recover money that was stolen from this 1MDB, and also recover money of assets that were purchased with 1MDB tainted funds,
Right. The reverberations were extraordinary across the planet, and it involved Goldman Sachs, Hollywood, the Wolf of Wall Street, which starred Leo DiCaprio, super yachts in the Arabian Sea. How much was the total bill? Do we have a total bill? I mean, I was looking at the numbers before we started recording, and 10 billion US dollars wouldn't be out of the ballpark from what I could tell.
Well, at its peak, 1MDB had rated more than 12 billion US dollars in debt. It was 12 billion US dollars in debt. So by far now, by most accounts, the government, Malaysian government, has recouped the bulk of that money, if not a little more, because many of the assets that were purchased with 1MDB-related funds actually appreciated in value. So the government has got more money than before. But still, what is interesting here is that is what, in my mind, really is a cover-up.
Right.
Najib has gone to jail. You know, Najib has gone to jail. But so there were so many perpetrators, people who were involved, from people who were from, people in government, company officials, lawyers, accountants, bankers, all of these guys, you know, no one has actually really paid a price. So this book project that I embarked on was basically to provide an account as accurately as possible by bringing together a whole lot of info based on documents, WhatsApp messages, emails, a whole lot of stuff, and construct and provide a reconstruction of what actually happened.
Right.
You know, and also the political dimension, which eventually led to the fall of the National Front government, you know, one of the longest ruling coalitions in the world, in 2018. But the book tells that even after that change in government, much in Malaysia hasn't changed, which is why the country remains under siege.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the title, Siege of It.
Right. Many years ago, I wrote a book called Barings Lost, which was on the collapse of the Barings Bank. And
yes, I remember that.
Nick Leeson went to jail for that. He was the trader operating out of Singapore.
Yeah.
But just in the account we had, I could have fingered at least half a dozen people who should have been prosecuted as well. But there was no one willing to do that. Is that the same experience with 1MDB that... it's Najib. I mean, it's very difficult to feel sorry for him or his wife, Rosma Mansour, her of the 500 handbags. But was he a scapegoat? Was he put out there to fry? Or is it a conspiracy? Or is it just kind of let matters lie?
Well, I think really 15 federal court judges in Malaysia's judiciary unanimously found him guilty after the High Court said that he was guilty of corruption, right? So the verdict against Najib is pretty unanimous.
Right.
But I think how the case was prosecuted raises a number of questions.
Yep.
The Malaysian prosecutors appear to only go use much of what was uncovered by the DOJ, Department of Justice,
right,
in its civil forfeiture court, and did very little serious investigations in Malaysia, you know, how there's been no audit, no kind of review into why our institutions failed. You know, how did we allow so much of money to leave the system?
Yeah.
You know, what was the central bank doing? What was, you know, what were lawyers doing? What were accountants doing? What was the government doing? Even then, what was the board of 1MDB doing at that point?
Right.
So I think these are the questions that Malaysians need to ask, the system needs to ask, and the new government of Anwar Ibrahim needs to address. These are things that are very important. And I think the key here is that full audit is required to make sure that something this large doesn't happen. I mean, you know, you've covered Malaysia for so long, and you know, we've jounced from one financial scandal to the other, you know. And during Mahathir's time, there were numerous financial scandals, from the steel fiasco, a steel plant that, you know, lost more than 18 billion ringgit.
Yep.
I mean, the late Barry Wayne, who did the Malaysian Maverick, you know,
and he wrote, Barry wrote Maverick Mahathir. I'm just going to get that in for a plug because Barry, he's since passed, but by God, he was a good journalist. Yeah.
Exactly. And he estimated that the economic experiments in the name of national programs or privatization programs, I think, must have cost Malaysia something like 100 billion ringgit during the Mahathir's years. So, 1MDB is taken in isolation as one scandal. Clearly, that sends shockwaves around the globe, like you pointed out. But really, in Malaysia, it's just another economic fiasco by one of the longest ruling governments. And I think this is where that this thing needs to be seen in totality, actually.
Right.
That this is a Malaysian problem.
So I just want to couch this a certain way. So the Department of Justice in the United States, they initiated much of the investigations, provided the legal framework for which Malaysia could prosecute, and they also went into negotiations with Goldman Sachs, who had to make a settlement of $2.9 billion, which is an extraordinary sum of money, even for a New York banker like they were. And I take it from what you're saying is that the Malaysians haven't even conducted a full audit of what happened to their money.
Yes, yeah. I mean, much of it has been, the Malaysians have relied on the DOJ.
Right.
And, I mean, the DOJ, I think, did a great job because of their oversight on international money flows.
Mm-hmm.
But the lapses of the institutions in Malaysia where this was ground zero, right, those things haven't been addressed.
Right.
I think that's something that needs to be addressed.
On another curio, if I remember correctly, the initial bond for the billion, it was an Islamic bond in the Islamic financial
markets?
Yes,
it was an Islamic bond. It was an Islamic bond, which is kind of normal in the Malaysian financial system, Islamic bond. And that bond will be due in 2000, it's a 30-year bond.
Right.
And it was issued in 2029. That's
right.
The only outstanding amount that Malaysia needs to settle, that 5 billion ringgit. Everything
right.
else is close. But like I said, there is still much to answer about this thing,
sure.
about this affair. And hopefully, you know, this speech within provides a portrait of this epic from start to finish in one single comprehensive account.
Right. The only reason I'm asking about the Islamic bond, because they did carry a more generous coupon rate than the regular bonds. And out of curiosity, has there been any fallout with the Islamic financial markets because of this? Are they less trustworthy or is it business as usual?
I think it's business as usual, because, I mean, the credit rating for the Malaysian government, for Malaysia, it still remains very high. You know,
right.
Malaysia generally doesn't default on any of its loans or anything like that.
Yep.
So generally, scandals aside, if a paper, in this case a bond issue, is offered by the Malaysian government, they're really takers. You know, and generally it's oversubscribed. There's no problem for Malaysia as a government to go into the domestic or international financial markets to raise money.
Right.
The credit standing, despite the scandals that have really, you know, clouded Malaysia, the credit standing of this country remains high. Just imagine if we had half the number of problems that we have typically with all these scandals, right?
Yeah.
The country's rating is, we just really jumped, you know.
It could be a damn sight higher.
I
remember after the Barings Lost Book came out, went back to Singapore and spoke with some of my sources about a year or two later. And I did ask them what was the impact on the Singapore market, and they said it was great. I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, options trade was not very well known in those days, and he put it right on the business pages around the planet, and business actually looked up. You know, so it was a bit of an odd byproduct, I thought, at the time, but that sounds like it's similar circumstances in Malaysia, although there's a lot more money in Malaysia, I must add, very quickly. Who are the people who you think are most at fault, who haven't been accounted for in 1MDB? Who do you think deserves to be further investigated, or what institutions for that matter?
I wouldn't want to single out anyone, but I think the government needs to revisit this chapter. You know, revisit this episode, look at it very, very carefully, serious audit. I would even think, you know, a commission of inquiry into this whole thing. And, you know, just to make sure that where the lapses were, what happened. I mean, it clearly shows that the Prime Minister's position in Malaysia, in a country where the position is extremely powerful, it can trump the independence of certain institutions because a lot of these appointments are based on the government. So I think this is going to be something that Malaysia needs to deal with. Getting investors and foreigners, potential people who want to invest in this country. I think the key thing here is that for the Malaysian government to revisit this, find out exactly what were the lapses, and also consider understanding why the Prime Minister is so powerful in this country, being able to do something, carry out something like 1MDB. These kind of questions need to be asked by the current government and by public interest groups in Malaysia. You know? I think these are serious questions before we move on.
I think you're quite right. One of the issues I constantly have with not just Malaysia, but other Southeast Asian countries as well, and it's a boring subject to write about as a journalist, but is this lack of separation of powers, the lack of independence for, you know, between the institutions like the central bank, the markets, the inability to say, hey, this is a conflict of interest. Rosma Mansour, she helped put it on the front pages, as I mentioned before. You know, it was one of the biggest raids in history. $280 million, I think, they fetched out of a house owned by them. And they 500 handbags. It's extraordinary.
I think people are still reeling about the kind of shenanigans that went on, you know. Mm. And it is something that, to be fair, I think a lot of people want to move away from this right. saga, right? A lot of people would like to move away and move on. But I think the fact that we haven't had a full accounting is something that needs to be addressed. And hopefully this book, to some extent, will provide some kind of clarity, a reconstruction that will present to the public, what really happened in Ground Zero.
Well, it's very difficult to have closure when you don't know what happened. You know, the hidden ghosts in the system and who did what. How important do you think Rosma Mansour, the then First Lady and Najib's wife, how much influence did she have over him? Because I am constantly left under the impression that she wielded enormous influence. And perhaps some of the things that did happen may not have happened if she was not in the picture.
Well, I really don't know. I mean, I don't know the dynamics of the personal relationship, but I mean, she did certainly wield a lot of influence. But the point remains that the Prime Minister's position in Malaysia remains very, very powerful.
Yep.
There are a lot of powers that come with the position. Mm-hmm. And currently, Anwar Ibrahim enjoys those powers too, you know.
Sure.
So I think, you know, I think these are questions that need to be asked. I mean, it's not like it's a personality thing. I mean, it could be a personality thing too. But for years, politicians, ruling politicians in Malaysia have just run roughshod over the system and very much always in promoting extractive economic policies. You know?
Right.
There's nothing that's invested back into a system, you know, it's largely extractive here.
And of course, that has to include Mahathir Mohamad, who, I mean, it's hard, it'll be interesting to see how history judges him because, what a mixed legacy he has.
The plot of the book is actually, it's on the political debauchery that has long afflicted Malaysian systems.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a lead of bad actors, you know, layers of self-indulgence, so many things, abuses for personal gain.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, it shows this interconnected web of lies that is fun for a long time. So hopefully we get somewhere with this one.
I'm sure you will. I mean, from what I understand, sales are doing quite well. It's only, I think the official release date is September 24, but it's already on the shelves and it's people are snapping it up.
Yeah, there's clearly some interest and, you know, it's encouraging, but it would be nice to see what kind of public impact this book has. You know?
Have you had any reaction from the government or those that were involved going back? Oh, Malaysia's not always an easy country for journalists to function in.
Actually, tell you the truth, Luke, I was having a chat yesterday, good buddy, last night, and I've been silent so far. It's deafening, actually.
I don't know what that means. I think you'll be fine. I mean, I remember when Barry Wayne bought out Maverick Mahathir and people were always shocked that you could actually buy it in your local bookstore and it sold very well. It was so critical of Mahathir and went into all the... and it aired all the dirty linen. And it's kind of... Malaysia's... It's a country where one minute you can feel totally oppressed as a journalist and the way pressure can be brought to bear, and then at other times, man, you can do a lot there, which has always been one of its virtues.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's been, I'm sort of like entering my 39th year now as a journalist, and it's been really a good time, actually. You know, couldn't give it up for anything.
Yeah, it's a good ride. And of course, there's a full cast of characters. Where are some of them now? Where's Joe Lowe. He was living high off the hog, running around in those super yachts and hanging out in Hollywood. Where are they?
And Joe clearly, I mean, the main characters, you got Najib, who's in jail.
Yep.
Joe Lowe remains at large together with another close associate of his, Nick Faisal, mm-hmm. who played big roles in the 1 MVP and associate companies involved with it. One Faisal is believed to be in Indonesia.
Right.
Joe Lowe, at this point, is widely believed to be in China.
Okay.
The question is, what kind of efforts are being made to secure these individuals?
Right.
I don't think very much at this point. To some extent, I think some people in the new Anwar government want to put a full stop to the 1MDB affair.
That's what I wanted to ask next, yeah.
Yeah, you know, with all the money that's been recouped, I think there are people within the Anwar circle mm. that believe that, look, the country needs to move on. Mm-hmm. Najib has been said, we've received this money. But also, at the same time, believe that there should be some kind of overall review into this whole affair, you know, and what really happened. So, while they want to move on, but a national audit on 1MDB mm. is also something that people yeah. would like to see.
Yeah, it's remarkable the shades of Nick Leeson in the sense of Baring's Lost story, which I quickly add that it's out of print. There's no gaining in it for me by plugging it. But when they prosecuted Nick Leeson and they put him in prison, they didn't want to put anyone else in the dock. They didn't want to put anyone else on trial, because if they did, those people are going to want to cut a deal with the prosecutors, with the investigators, which means other people are going to be brought in. They're going to be prosecuted as yep. well. And it was like they just wanted not a scapegoat of sorts, but they just wanted to shut everything down and shut everybody up. And it seems to me that seems to be the case with J Lo in China and Faisal in Indonesia, if indeed that's where they are.
I think that clearly is one view. I don't know what is the real situation, but clearly that is the thinking on one end of the spectrum. Yeah.
Right.
You know, that people just want to move on from this thing. I mean, it's a debacle of, you know, huge proportions, and, you know, the sooner they walk away from it, I guess, those who have not been implicated won't have to worry.
Right, but I think going back to where we started this conversation, that if Malaysia would like to enjoy a higher credit rating, if it would like to attract international investors further up the food chain, then it's still a conversation that needs to be had.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean,
right.
You know, exactly. That's, I think, is something we as journalists try to expose. And yeah, you know, it's a conversation that really deserves to be had.
Okay. How long did it take you to write the book when you finally decided to sit down and pull it all together?
Getting a lot of the material was to bulk of time. I started the book about 2 years ago
mm-hmm.
and very much came to a kind of final draft in just before Christmas last year.
Okay.
And then got hooked up with Penguin in late February, and we headed to the bookstores in a couple of weeks now.
Okay, well, it's a culmination of a lot of work. So dare I ask you at least one last question? What's next? Because, you know, when you bring a book out, you'll have an audience, and then people will be looking at you and perceive you, you know, within the framework of that book. But all the work's been done. You can rest on your laurels or you can do something else. What are you planning next?
Well, I'm still writing. I still work for Channel News Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a break, a two-month break.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, open to, still got a few more good years of journalism left, I guess.
I'm sure
and
you have.
And I'd like to continue doing it, yeah.
I'm sure you have. Very good. Leslie, anything for a quick
ad? Thank you. Look, just thank you very much for having me on this podcast. Really appreciate it.
On that note, Leslie Lopez, been a terrific chat. Good luck with the book, The Siege Within, just published by Penguin. It's already in the bookshops in KL, but it will be in bookshops everywhere, I'm sure, because this story had enormous ramifications for the global money markets. Leslie Lopez, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, mate.